Mr. West, good afternoon, brethren. Good to see all of you. Even though Mr. Lukey is older than me, much older than me, I'm going to use the light even though he didn't need it. So, oh, let's see. There's the brightest setting. All right. Well, good to see all of you. It's good to be here. I will, quickly, before I get into my message, a couple of things I'll share with you. Please do continue to keep Mike and Lynn in your prayers, especially Lynn. You all know Lynn. Lynn's a very optimistic person, and so when the prayer request goes out, it's like, no, I'm improving, I'm getting better. And I don't want to say that she's not, but she's certainly struggling a lot still with AFib. So that's the biggest issue, I think, for her, is that her heart just won't get back in rhythm. And so, of course, that brings a lot of fatigue with it. If any of you have experienced AFib before, it, from what I understand, is terribly uncomfortable and terribly exhausting. So please do keep her, especially both of them, but please keep Lynn especially in your prayers. I will also say before I get started that I take exception with Mr. Lukey's comment about being an unathletic group of people here, okay? I know we have a lot of athletes out there. I think it's probably we have so much humility in the Atlanta congregation, right? We want to give the Gainesville congregation an opportunity to play and maybe win a little bit. So those of us, you know, we decided to give them that opportunity. And then finally, I'll say, you know, I'll do my best to be a little bit quicker. My youngest, before I came up here, she said, "Are you speaking as long as Mia's dad did?" And I said, "Well, that's the plan, but I'll do my best. I'll see if I can speed it up and beat his time." Well, brethren, how would we define success? I'd say for most people, when the word success comes up, the first thought, obviously, in human nature and in our lives, might be financial success. That's probably one of the first things that comes to most of our minds. But for those of us that God has called, I would imagine if we really think about success, we probably have a different definition, that it's not completely centered around financial success. Because what we come to learn once God has called us is that this physical life is temporary, isn't it? And the older we get, certainly the more we realize how temporary it really is. The ultimate goal, we know, the ultimate purpose of this life is not to be wealthy. It's not financial success. You know, a while back I had gotten into a high-level discussion about politics with somebody at work. And while we agreed on a few things and we disagreed on others, one of the things for me is that it was always nice to walk away from that conversation and say, you know, I'm glad I really don't have to stress about politics. I don't have to stress about, well, who did I vote for or who won the presidency, because ultimately we know that God is in charge. God is ultimately in charge of everything, and he has a plan of salvation. Not saying we don't stay up to date with the news, but we don't have to get so involved like most people in this world do. I'm glad we don't have to worry about this. I'm glad I don't have to worry and fret over who to vote for, because ultimately God is in charge. When we are called by God, our focus and what we look to changes. We have a different goal for our lives, and we have a different idea of what success in this life is. But we do have a goal, don't we? We do have a vision of what success looks like. It's not that we don't have a vision of success. It's not that we don't think about success. We do think about success. It's just different. There is something motivating us, isn't there? There's a quote by Robert Ringer. Robert Ringer was a well-known author and public speaker. The quote goes like this. He said, success is a matter of understanding and religiously practicing specific simple habits that always lead to success. Success is a matter of understanding and religiously practicing specific simple habits that always lead to success. And I think that there's a lot of truth in that quote. If we want to be successful in our lives, we first have to understand what success is. What is the goal? What is that thing we're shooting for? What is motivating us? And then the second thing we need to say and we need to develop is the discipline needed to be successful. It's one thing to understand what we're shooting for. It's one thing to know what's motivating us, but how do we get there? How do we do it? How do we discipline ourselves to reach that? And that's what I want to discuss with you in my time this morning. I want to discuss the differences between motivation and discipline. How are they different, and perhaps how are they married in our lives? You know, sometimes you'll see quotes that will say, well, discipline is greater than motivation, or motivation, you know, is better than discipline. Is one better than the other, or are they complementary? Let's start with motivation. How would we define motivation? Merriam-Webster's dictionary defines motivation as something that provides an incentive or a reason for doing something. Something that provides an incentive or a reason for doing something. It causes us to be enthusiastic. It provides motivation for us. So motivation is the reason we have to behave or act a certain way. And when we talk about motivation, there are two general categories that motivation falls into. You can have something that is intrinsic motivation, or you can have something that is extrinsic motivation. Now, intrinsic motivation is a desire that comes from within a person. Perhaps a desire to be better at a specific activity or to accomplish a specific goal we've set for ourselves. But extrinsic motivation, on the other hand, is inspired by outside forces, like a desire for praise, maybe a desire for recognition, maybe a desire for financial incentives. Probably most of us in this room get up and go to work every day because we're motivated by extrinsic motivation that we know we've got bills to pay. We've got rent or a mortgage that we need to pay. We need food to eat. Perhaps we have a family to take care of. But that's an extrinsic motivation for most of us. As you can imagine, extrinsic motivation can be very impactful. But intrinsic motivation, something that comes from within, can be incredibly powerful if it becomes woven into the fabric of our life and who we are. Intrinsic motivation can be powerful if it becomes woven into the fabric of our life and who we are. So an example of something that motivates us could be a goal we have personally. Maybe it's something that's very important to us. So it's not for external validation, but it's for our own fulfillment. Let's say you have a goal of running a marathon. Now, some of you are probably going to say, nah, ain't my goal. I do not want to run a marathon. I would probably put my hand up in that category. But let's assume for a second you have that goal. And you put that goal out there. Now, accomplishing that goal might motivate you for a period of time. But training for a goal like that is going to take a very long time. Many experts advise that you should be running 3 to 5 times per week for a year before you ever embark on training for a marathon. And even at that point, after running that base mileage every week for a year, the training for a marathon can take an additional 4 to 5 months. It's a long process. It's not something you just wake up one day and say, I'm going to run it 26.2 miles. It's not easy and it's not quick, so staying motivated for that goal is going to have its ups and downs. And you may have an exciting image of your head of crossing the finish line and reaching that goal, but the daily grind of putting in the effort to reach that goal is not going to be easy, and it's not going to be quick. But if it's intrinsic and you really want it, and you keep it at the forefront of your thoughts, this goal can help motivate you and push you to do the hard training routine. Brethren, what is our goal? What is our goal? What do we have set in our minds as what we are really striving for? What is motivating us in our spiritual journey? 2 Timothy 4. For those of us that aren't motivated by running a marathon or going to the sports night this evening, what is motivating us? What is the goal? 2 Timothy 4, verse 8. Finally, there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me on that day, and not to me only, but also to all those who have loved his appearing. That's the motivation we have in our spiritual journey. A crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me on that day. That's the motivation. That's our goal. That's what success will look like for us. That's what we're striving for. Maybe some of you have heard of a vision board, right? It's a tactic that some people use to keep goals at the forefront of their minds. So you can make a collage, maybe of pictures, maybe it's places you want to go, maybe it's something you want to achieve, maybe you want to travel, and so you put a picture of some location that you want to have the opportunity to go to one day, and you can make a vision board with pictures that represent the goal. Maybe you want to reach something in your professional life. Maybe you wanted to be a doctor or a lawyer when you were younger, and you can cut out a picture of a doctor and something and put that on the board. Or maybe you want to save up for a nice vehicle, so you put a picture of that vehicle on your vision board. The point is to sit down, you define what your goals are, and you put pictures of those goals on the vision board. It's a physical way to stay focused on our goals. What would be on our vision board? Certainly 2 Timothy would be on our vision board. Let's go to another, 1 Thessalonians. 1 Thessalonians 4 and verse 16. This is going on our spiritual vision board. For the Lord himself will descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of an archangel, and with the trumpet of God. And the dead in Christ will rise first, and we who are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air, and thus we shall always be with the Lord. Therefore, comfort one another with these words. Is that on your vision board? Is that on my vision board? Is that what we're keeping at the forefront of our minds? Is that what's motivating us? Or do I have other things that are taking a higher priority on my vision board? Do I have other things that are crowding that vision out, that goal out? That should be our top priority. That should be motivating us. That's the goal. That's success. That's what we're striving for. And what's incredible motivation that is, it should be for us the greatest motivation in our lives. So motivation is the reason we behave or act a certain way. Motivation is that goal we're striving for that's keeping us pushing. How about discipline? How about discipline? How do we define discipline? When I use the word discipline, I mean being disciplined in your conduct or your actions. Not discipline, perhaps, we would give to a child or somebody for bad behavior. But what does it mean to be disciplined in our own lives? Well, again, Merriam-Webster defines discipline as control gained by enforcing obedience or orderly and prescribed conduct or pattern of behavior. Orderly or prescribed conduct or pattern of behavior. Self-control. You know, discipline could be defined as being able to work or act in a specific way while adhering to standards and guidelines that work towards success in a specific area. The simplest way that I can think to describe it is that discipline is tied to actions. Discipline is tied to behavior. Discipline is where we might say the rubber meets the road. It's not just something we want to do or accomplish or achieve in the future. Discipline is tied to what do I actually do day in and day out, week in and week out, month in and month out, year in and year out. What am I actually doing? Deuteronomy 11. Deuteronomy chapter 11. We'll pick it up in verse 18. Therefore, you shall lay up these words of mine in your heart and in your soul, and bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. And of course, we know you've got the head and the hand. thoughts and actions. You shall teach them to your children, speaking of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. When are we doing it? All the time. Continually. Continually being disciplined to teach our children, speaking about God's commandments and His words. When you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. Always. Always disciplined. And you shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. That's the discipline we need to learn as parents. That we're first and foremost writing God's laws on our own hearts. That God's laws govern our thoughts and our actions. And second, that we live up to our responsibility to diligently teach them to our children. When we sit in our house, when we spend time with them, at night before bed, in the morning when they wake up. That takes real discipline, doesn't it? Anyone that's been a parent knows that takes real discipline to think about and put into practice talking about God's way of life at all times with our children. It's not easy to do, and it certainly doesn't just come naturally to human nature. That's a learned and a practiced behavior. That's intentional. That is action that will produce the results God wants in our lives. And the lives of our children. There's a research paper published in 2005, and it was entitled "Self-Discipline Outdoes IQ in Predicting Academic Performance in Adolescence." Self-discipline outdoes IQ in predicting academic performance in adolescence. It was published by Angela Duxworth and Martin Seligman. In their research, they studied 300 eighth grade students. The goal of the study was to understand what factors are going to most accurately predict academic performance. What factors are going to most accurately predict academic performance? The conclusion of their research was that self-discipline most accurately predicted final grades, school attendance, and test scores. Self-discipline. So not the discipline of the parents, but the self-discipline of the students. In fact, self-discipline accounted for more than twice as much variance as IQ. In other words, discipline in their lives and working hard and being diligent was more impactful on their academic success than their IQ was. There was a stronger correlation between self-discipline and the outcome than there was between IQ and the outcome. It wasn't about being brilliant. It wasn't about just knowing the information. It was about self-discipline to do the work. It wasn't necessarily the students with the highest IQ that excelled. It was the most disciplined students that excelled. And the reverse was true as well. The least disciplined students did not excel. What they saw was that you don't have to be the smartest person in the room to do well. In fact, even if you are the smartest person in the room, if you aren't disciplined in doing what you need to do to be successful, that IQ alone won't get it done. It's not enough. It's not enough to just know information or be smart. You have to be willing to put in the work. You have to be disciplined in the effort you put into accomplishing the goals. 1 Corinthians chapter 1. I think that's such an important concept for children to learn and for us to learn as well in our personal lives, in business, in our spiritual lives. It's not about being the smartest. It is not about being the smartest. That helps. It's not a bad thing. But self-discipline is so much more important and is so much more an accurate predictor of success in every aspect than just IQ. 1 Corinthians 1:25. Because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. For you see your calling, brethren, that not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. God didn't call the brilliant. God didn't call the strongest. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to put to shame the wise. And God has chosen the weak things of the world to put to shame the things which are mighty. And the base things of the world and the things which are despised God has chosen. And the things which are not, to bring to nothing the things that are, that no flesh should glory in his presence. God hasn't chosen to call many mighty, many wise, according to how this world measures wisdom. But the beautiful part is, we don't have to be brilliant to follow God, do we? It's not complicated, but it does require discipline. When he reveals his truth to us, we must be disciplined to practice it and follow him, and to be thankful that he has called us and revealed his truth to us. We know we didn't figure it out on our own. We didn't come to this understanding all by ourselves. It's because he has chosen to reveal his truth to us at this time. And so our job is to be disciplined to follow and keep his commandments. So discipline is tied to our actions, the actions we take daily. So now that we've defined motivation and discipline, what are some of the key differences between them? What are some of the key differences? Well, the first thing that I would say is that motivation doesn't have to be taught, but diligence does. Motivation doesn't have to be taught, but diligence does. We don't typically have to learn to be motivated by things. Let me give you a simple example from my family. You know, my children are motivated by different things, especially the boys versus the girls. Any parent out there has probably experienced the same thing. Let's take the difference between the two. My sons both enjoy playing baseball. So every season, there is a desire, there is a motivation to go out there and play baseball. And there's, of course, always a motivation and a desire for a new bat or a new glove, perhaps. And so when they come to my wife and I and they want those things, we know that they will be motivated to work and save toward those goals. I don't have to teach them to be motivated by that. They like baseball. They're motivated by things pertaining to baseball. Now, conversely, on the other side, with my daughter, she has no interest in baseball. And that's okay, but you know what she does love? She loves dolls. I didn't have to teach her to love dolls or to be motivated by the thought of getting a new doll. She loves to play with them, so she's motivated by the thought of getting a new doll. Now, if my children come to me and they want a new baseball glove or they want a new doll to play with, and if I tell my children they have to work to get something new, well, all of a sudden the conversation changes a little bit, doesn't it? They might say something like, "Well, Dad, you and Mom have money. You can just buy the baseball bat. You can buy the glove. You can buy the doll. I don't understand. What do you mean I have to work to earn it? What do you mean I have to save up to buy it? How long is it going to take?" Well, I guess that depends how nice the bat is, or how nice the baseball glove is, or how nice the doll is. It could take months to save up because you want something expensive. We have to teach our children that in order to reach a goal, there is work and effort that needs to be put in. Nobody reaches their goals without hard work and discipline. It's not possible. We can't just snap our fingers and get whatever we want. And once we teach our children that there is work to do to reach a goal, at first, the excitement might be very high. But over time, it might wane. They might come and they say, "Okay, what do you want me to do? You want me to vacuum? You want me to sweep? You want me to take out the trash, feed the animals, clean my room? No problem." And if it's short-lived, well, that motivation is going to probably continue to push them through. And that discipline will probably be there for a short period of time. But if they finish one quick chore and then we give them another, and then another, and then another, and the weeks go by or the months go by, well, what happens to that motivation and discipline? It might ebb and flow. It might wane over time the longer they have to keep up doing the work. And all of a sudden, the thing that had motivated them so early on maybe doesn't seem quite as motivating as time goes on. And this is where teaching them diligence and discipline and perseverance comes in. Let's go to James. James chapter 1 and verse 2. James 1 and verse 2. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. Sometimes how we view things when we're young, you know, mom and dad want me to help out around here. They want me to help clean the house. They want me to help cut the grass in the middle of the summer. Now, that might seem, when we're young, that might seem like a real trial. That might seem like a real hardship. But we have to teach them, and what we learn in our own spiritual lives is that there is incredible value in learning character when we endure difficult things in our lives. And certainly as we grow older, the more we realize that those things we thought were hardships, or those things we thought were trials when we were young, weren't really trials at all. Discipline does not come naturally. It is learned. What else could we say are differences between discipline and motivation? Motivation is the desire to achieve a goal, but discipline drives you to do what is necessary to achieve it. Motivation is the desire to achieve a goal, but discipline drives you to do what is necessary to achieve it. There's a clip from a number of years back. It is one of the strength and conditioning coaches from the Georgia Tech football team. One of the strength and conditioning coaches was giving a motivational speech after practice to try to get the team ready for an upcoming game. And he was talking about winning. And the point of his speech was that in order to win, you have to be willing to put in the work, the hard work that is required to reach your goals. And he brought out that the challenge can be that life doesn't always seem fair. You may work as hard as you can and still not win. And from a human and a physical perspective, we all know that that can be true at times. We can give 100% sometimes, and it still might not go the way we had hoped it would go. Sometimes you give it your all, and someone else may still beat you in a sport or in a game, or something may not turn out the way you wanted. But what the strength and conditioning coach emphasized is that if you want a chance to win, you have to be willing to give it your all. And in his speech, he asked this question, and I'll share it with you because it was probably the most impactful part of the speech. He said, "Are you willing to sprint when the distance is unknown? Are you willing to sprint when the distance is unknown?" Now think about that for a second. A 100-meter dash might seem like, okay, you can give it all you've got for 100 meters. And then you say, okay, maybe 200 meters. Maybe I can give it everything I've got for 200 meters. How about three? How about four? How about a mile? At what point do we say, well, I can't give it my all because I've got to save something? But the point of his whole message is we've got to be willing to give it our all. And I think that that can be applicable in our own personal lives and in our spiritual lives. I like that quote because it emphasizes that if we want to win, you don't just jog. We don't just walk. We sprint. We give it everything we have. The challenge is, especially when we think about our lives and our spiritual journey, we don't know how long our race will be. We don't know how long the journey is. But the length of the race shouldn't impact the effort we put in. Why is that important? I don't ever want to allow myself to say, I'm 39 years old, maybe I'll live till 80, so I don't have to get real serious right now. Maybe I can just coast. Maybe once I retire, I'll give more time and more energy to my prayer and Bible study. Down the road, I'll put in real effort, but right now, you know, I've got some time. I don't ever want to say that. I don't ever want to say that in my life. I'll really focus my time and attention down the road because I just don't have the time to do it right now. I've got too many other responsibilities. And the reverse is equally as important. You know, sometimes we can have that first love. You know, I'm on fire for the truth, and I study, and I pray, and I try to convert my friends and family. But over time, maybe I get tired. Maybe the journey is a lot farther than I thought. Maybe it's a lot harder than I thought. I was sprinting for so many years. I don't want to sprint anymore. I'm tired of sprinting. I want to jog. I want to coast. I'm ready to let my foot off the gas. Are you willing to sprint? Am I willing to sprint when the distance is unknown? Ecclesiastes chapter 12. Ecclesiastes chapter 12. Ecclesiastes is an interesting book. You know, I think Solomon's an interesting character in the Bible, a man that had lived one of the fullest lives in the history of mankind. Solomon had it all, didn't he? We've talked about that in the past. Money, power, fame, wisdom, he had all things at his disposal. And with all these things, with this wisdom that God had blessed him with, he set out to answer some of the burning questions of life. Why are we here? What's the purpose of life? And when it's all said and done, what is the conclusion? Ecclesiastes 12 and verse 13. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. He had done it all. He had lived a life. He had partied. He had money. He had wealth. Let us hear the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. Discipline yourself to keep God's commandments. Solomon had done it all. Wild parties, alcohol, expensive clothes, nice jewelry, beautiful palaces, wives, concubines, you name it, he had it. He tried everything that could be tried from a physical standpoint. He sowed his wild oats. He met rulers from around the world. He made judgments when people had disagreements that couldn't be solved by others. God gave him more wisdom than anyone else that had ever lived. And after all of that, the conclusion is fear God and keep his commandments. Fear God and keep his commandments. Sadly, we read in 1 Kings that Solomon didn't do that. He allowed himself to be pulled away from following God when he was old. Will that happen to us? Will that happen to me? Will that happen to you? Are we willing to sprint when the distance is unknown? Will we stay disciplined to the end? That's what's needed to reach the goal. So why is the difference important? Are these concepts at odds, or do they really work together in our lives? Is one better than the other? Is motivation better than discipline, or discipline better than motivation? Well, I'll answer that question, and I'll say I believe, especially in our spiritual lives, we need both. We need to be motivated by the promises of God. We need to be motivated by the promise of eternal life in God's family. We need to be motivated by the promise that this physical life isn't all there is. That this is temporary, and the sufferings of this life aren't worthy to be compared to the glory that shall be revealed in us. And I don't think that that means for a second that the trials we go through are easy or simple. I think that that means that the glory that will be revealed in us is so incredible, it's hard for our brains to even fathom. We need that vision of the future. It's a vital part of our spiritual journey. But just as important is the discipline to do the work that God has laid before us. To live his way of life, to strive day in and day out, to swim upstream, to be different, to stand for his laws and his way of life, to sprint when the distance is unknown. because the trials of life are going to come at times, and that can temporarily impact our motivation. You know, Jim Rohn was an entrepreneur and a motivational speaker, and he's quoted as saying, "Discipline is the bridge between goals and accomplishments." Discipline is the bridge between goals and accomplishments. Let's go to Romans chapter 2. Romans chapter 2, as we bring this to a close. Romans chapter 2, and verse 6. God will repay each person according to what they have done. To those who by persistence in doing good seek glory, honor, and immortality, he will give eternal life. But for those who are self-seeking and who reject the truth and follow evil, there will be wrath and anger. We need to have the vision of the kingdom, but we must be disciplined to do the work. Now, I have a colleague at work that has applied for and interviewed for the same promotion 3 different times. And he's a good employee, he's very experienced, he's very knowledgeable, he's very hardworking. And it's not that he hasn't been qualified, but each time he's come in second, just shy of getting the promotion. You know, the first time it happened, I think it was hard, but not devastating for him. The second time it happened, I think it was really challenging for him. And then the third time, well, I thought he was going to leave for sure. It was very, very frustrating for him. Because he truly felt like he was going to get the promotion that third time. But what I'll tell you is each time, even though he's gone through short periods of frustration and lost some motivation for a period of time, after a while, he has picked himself up and gotten right back to work, doing everything he can to help customers and getting back out in the field and doing his job. And that's discipline. That is discipline, to pick yourself up from a disappointment and to keep going. That's an ability to push through and do what needs to be done. As a final passage, we'll turn to 1 Timothy chapter 4. 1 Timothy chapter 4, pick it up in verse 7. I'm actually going to read this from the New American Standard Translation. 1 Timothy 4, chapter 7. On the other hand, discipline yourself for the purpose of godliness. For bodily discipline is only of little profit. But godliness is profitable for all things, since it holds promise for the present life and also for the life to come. It is a trustworthy statement deserving full acceptance. For it is for this we labor and strive, because we have fixed our hope on the living God, who is the Savior of all men, especially of believers. Brethren, we need motivation and discipline in our lives. If we have them both, if we keep the vision at the forefront of our hearts and our minds, and if we discipline ourselves to do the work every day that needs to be done, we will reach the goal. Let's stay motivated, and let's stay disciplined.
Well, thank you, Mr. Jenkins.